Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. It is Wednesday, July 17th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have two lovely people making up my panel. I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly.
Sadly, John is here without his bell today because I also have Charlotte Henry with me today.
Hello. Thanks for having me back. I feel like I haven't been here a while.
It has been a while.
I thought you didn't love me anymore.
No, there was just a lot of sport and a lot of recovery time from said sports that, you know.
Like, I wasn't allowed on during the
No, we were spectating. Period. So, yeah, it was just, you know, yeah.
I hear you.
I didn't want to rub things in, and then, you know, there was a whole cricket situation, and, you know, it's been a real emotional roller coaster for you lately.
You have no idea.
Real talk, I probably don't. Mostly because I don't follow cricket, but that's really what it comes down to. Although if you do, you should absolutely talk to Charlotte about cricket, because I know that she has lots and lots to say about it. I promise.
Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
And I look forward to her podcast on the subject. So today, the first thing I wanted to start with was, John, you wrote an editorial yesterday about engineering at Apple.
Yeah, what started this was I've been doing a lot of reading about Johnny Ive leaving and about the design team now reporting to COO, Chief Operating Officer Jeff Williams. Mm-hmm. And the more I read, the more the idea kind of percolated in my brain that there had been a subtle shift in Apple's product line. And I think it's a bit of evidence that there was a little bit of design friction going on in within Apple, and that led to Johnny Ive's departure. And it all started, I think, when we wondered what was happening with the MacBook. You know, we had the MacBook Air, and without a Retina display, and a regular keyboard, a scissor keyboard. And I was on the bandwagon to support the idea that Apple take advantage of economies of scale and start selling the MacBook into colleges, the MacBook Air, in order to get a low price entry point, because my wife had reports that MacBooks are disappearing from campus because they're just too expensive. Mm-hmm. And then we had this lingering and ongoing conversation about, was the MacBook the future? Is the MacBook Air on the way out because it doesn't have a Retina display? What's going on? And then the MacBook did not get frequently updated dramatically. And then all of a sudden in the fall of 18, the MacBook Air took a giant leap. And that confused the issue even more. And then we were wondering what was going to happen to the MacBook Air. And I think that the MacBook Air was this concession to ultimate mobility. You know, it weighs 920 grams. It's a Mac OS in a 920-gram enclosure, perfect for an airline flight on the tray table, perfect for carrying around with you all day long without much weight penalty. But the problem was that it was too thin. The Butterfly keyboard was designed to match the thinness, and that was created problems on the MacBook Pro. It didn't have enough room for a fan or for a more powerful, didn't have enough heat capacity for a more powerful CPU.
Right.
And so finally, I think it just came to a head that the Mac lineup was confusing. The MacBook had no future. The MacBook Air was beloved by the customers. It had the size and capacity for growth, engineering, performance growth. And then we see Johnny Ive deciding to retire from full-time at Apple. At the end of the year, I think it kicks in.
Yeah.
And I started thinking, you know, there's been some engineering changes that are sort of parallel to this. You know, we have the glorious Mac Pro, the 2019 Pro. Who would have thought that Apple would be bold enough to go back to a cheese grater design? You know, Apple should have taken a lot more ribbing than they did. Maybe I didn't read the articles. Maybe they're there. But I didn't see a whole lot of intense ridicule of Apple for going back to a cheesecake design. I think cheese grater design, I think the idea was basically, yeah, you know, we need airflow for a powerful computer, and this is a beautiful way to do it. Mm-hmm. But we got that, and then we got the MacBook.
The word beautiful is doing a lot of work there.
I'm sorry?
The word beautiful is doing a lot of work.
Yeah, well, you know, it depends.
I would call it an elegant design. Like, it's a really...
It's the prettiest cheese grater you've ever seen.
It's a nice looking way to solve a very practical problem, which is airflow, right. In my opinion. Like, right. I think it's a nice way to do it.
And then we got the MacBook cancellation.
Yeah.
And then I read an article...
The 13-inch one.
12-inch.
12-inch MacBook is canceled.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And then that would have not pushed me over the edge. But then I saw an article at Digital Trends about mounting evidence that Apple's going to kill the butterfly switch altogether and go back to a more modern scissor design that still keeps the keyboard and the keys thin.
Hallelujah.
And that sort of was the nail in the coffin for me, that somebody at Apple is enforcing these design changes, and who better than the design team reporting to Jeff Williams, kind of exercising his authority. And he's done that because he's been so successful with the Apple Watch. You know, he was sort of like the lead spirit, maybe not the direct product manager, but the spokesman for and the influence over the design of the Apple Watch.
Yeah, although Johnny Ive, let's be clear, was very involved in the Apple Watch as well, and his new company is going to focus on health care.
But remember Johnny Ive's?
Well, that's why we had an $18,000 Apple Watch. I mean,
well, that's it. The original Ive concept was a fashion item. And Jeff Williams pushed the health and focus issue, which became much more
And I suspect Tim
successful.
Had quite a big...
Right. So I think Jeff Williams is slowly gaining more authority and more respect and more influence. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing these engineering decisions sort of clarify themselves now rather than be the result of some internal standoff.
Well, and
so
for people,
that was my thesis.
For people who don't know, you've seen Jeff Williams at a few Apple events. He generally is the person they go to talk about the new Apple Watch stuff. So if his name is ringing a bell sort of vaguely, that might be why, because we generally see him come out and demo whatever's new and hip and happening on the Apple Watch. He came out and talked to us, I think, about Research Kit. Was one of the first times I remember seeing him, because that was like 4 years ago when they started talking about being able to do large scale research projects with Apple Watches and things like that. We've seen a lot.
He's Tim Cook, basically.
Yes, I would agree with that assessment.
Charlotte, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Can I quote you?
You can't, because it's actually Leander Carnes. It's in Leander's very good biography of Tim Cook. Sadly, I have to give him the credit.
It's
a very good assessment. So nice work, Leander. That's part of, like, for me, when you mentioned Jeff Williams, that was one of the things I went and looked up. Was I was like, I know he's COO, but I know we've seen him at some things. And so I think he has sort of taken some of the Phil Schiller piece of what in previous iterations of Apple Media events, somebody that comes out and talks about some of the stuff. And he's pretty low key about it. And is an interesting dude to see on stage giving part of the presentation. So I'm interested to see where he's going to take this. But the engineering stuff, like the thing that I think about when we hear, they may put in a new, they may get new keyboards and ditch this butterfly nonsense. And there's nonsense doing a lot of work. Charlotte.
Generous.
Yeah, I'm trying to be diplomatic here. For me, part of what this means is that Apple talked about how removing the headphone jack from the iPhone was courage, right? I think courage is going to be the next computer is going to weigh a little more, or it's going to be a little thicker. Because you get all this other stuff for it. Or they're going to do something in the design where they're going to try and prove that the trade-off was worth it. And honestly, I feel like they're going to put a lot more work into it than they actually need. Because if they just came out on stage and said, the new one is 4 millimeters thicker and you got your scissor switches back, people would lose their minds in joy. Like, nobody would be happier. there's no courage there. It would be a very easy thing to sell people. We got rid of the butterfly keyboard by making the computer 4 millimeters thicker than the last one. And like, no one will care.
Those engineers will rejoice. There's more room for more design freedom, for faster CPUs, a little more heat flow, a little more airflow.
Even if it's just the tiniest bit, and it's so we could change the keyboard, or so we could put a fan in it, or so we could put this chip in it that needs a fan, and now there's a fan. Like, I feel like Apple is going to try and find a whole bunch more framework to hang that sort of decision on, as opposed to just chalking it up to courage like they did with the headphone jack.
It's sort of like the ill-fated Apple III. Remember that? Steve wouldn't allow a fan to be put into the Apple III.
Yeah.
Remember that? And then what happened was is that as it got warm, chips would pop out of the sockets and it would fail.
Yeah.
Apple's tech note was to take the Apple III and put it 18 inches above the table and drop it to reseat the chips.
Was it that far? I just remember like reading. I don't remember how far, but I remember reading the note.
That's not a.
But the official
number, but
mostly because those things were heavy, and I just don't know if you could lift it a foot and a half off the table without another person. But I remember the tech note being, because it's one of those like great tech notes of history, like the one from Nintendo that says if you're having trouble with the cartridge, blow on the cartridge and put it back in and keep playing your game. That was like the official stance. And I remember the official stance is you pick it up from the table and drop it on the table and that will reseat the chips and you can move on. So like, I wonder what they're going to do to package these decisions, because I don't think they have to do much. I don't think they have to do as much as Apple thinks they have to do. That's where I'm at.
I want to jump back actually to the actual core of John's piece, which is a really good piece, and you know, talking about Jeff Williams and him taking control of this, and kind of it looked, you know, the way John, I don't think I'm putting words in your mouth to say it looked to me that John thinks that Jeff Williams has kind of beaten Johnny Ive in this kind of battle, and perhaps that's not surprising with someone with the mentality of Tim Cook at the top. But I think Apple does have to be a little bit careful. Apple is a company associated with making beautiful things, right? Mm-hmm. And like, if you wanted something that was kind of had everything packed in, but wasn't that, and you didn't really care about what it looked, you could get a Dell PC for probably half the price, and it would do a lot. And yeah, do you know what I mean? There's something else about Apple products. There is an X factor, and Johnny Ive was that X factor. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to rehash too much the conversations we had on this show when Johnny Ive left. But I do think that while John is making a very fair point that, you know, ultimately computers have to work and be powerful and provide what people need. Mm-hmm. Also, there is an X factor with Apple that is the way, it's part of the reason why they get away with selling devices at such a high cost, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at my Mac Mini. That's a really innovative, pretty design, right?
Mm-hmm. Also shiny.
Very shiny. The MacBook Air is exactly as John just described. It's beautiful. It's compact. It's really convenient to use in a whole host of situations. There's more to Apple products than just CPUs and fans and chipsets.
It's a balance.
It's absolutely.
Maybe the balance went too far. My readers are telling me that Apple went too far. The obsessive with thinness was harming the products.
Yes. And I would agree with that.
To back up a little bit, still design the products that are graceful and beautiful, lovely to touch and hold and use, but just don't go over the line to excess.
How can I put this delicately? I can't put this delicately. John, your readers are nerds. And
what?
But we love nerds. I freaking love nerds, and that's great. But for most normal people, the way stuff looks is all like they're not going to worry about what chip is in there or what fan is in there. Okay, I think they do worry when the blooming keyboard breaks, right?
Yeah, if you look at it really hard and the return key stops working, you have a problem.
Right, that bothers day-to-day normal users. That stuff matters. But like some of the other stuff that John is describing, I'm not sure matters to most users. Now, the products he's describing, I probably agree, are better. You know, the kind of, yes, you do need a fan, you do want a more powerful CPU. But for most people, for most use cases, I suspect they don't notice it.
Which is why Apple gets away with selling a older product in the stores before the new Mac Mini came out that you bought, Charlotte.
Correct.
We were spending a lot of time criticizing Apple for selling in the Apple stores a Mac Mini from 2012.
And well, people were and also the old iMacs.
They were buying them without noticing, you know, how old it was.
And the old iMacs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Talking of other old products that Apple are still flogging.
Mm-hmm.
See what I did there?
Just go
see
for
what
it.
I did there?
I do. Go for it.
So John got a bee in his bonnet about Apple engineering, mm-hmm. which is a good bee to have. I went into the Apple store in London and came out with a massive bee in my bonnet. Like possibly an entire beehive. Because I looked at the iPod Touch and I thought, ooh, pretty device. Useful to have, you know, have this as an iOS device.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, nice shop assistant. How much does this device cost? The 32 GB iPod Touch costs £199 in the UK. It costs $199 in the US. If you want a 256 iPod Touch, don't ask me why you need such a thing. But anyway, it exists.
If you really wanted that much storage, you can have it.
For either £399 or $399.
Yes.
This is totally, totally unjustifiable and ridiculous.
Yes.
Like, it is beyond ridiculous. It's the type of... I didn't realise how ridiculous this was. But until I really started thinking about it and sort of maybe possibly buy one. And I could think of a number of use cases and I outlined them in the piece... Or on the site.
Do I get the math right? Is it $200 extra when it goes from $199 to $399?
That's from 32 to...
Yeah, 32 is $199. 128 is $299. And 256 is $399.
Is this increment in line with iPhone prices as well? Because maybe Apple didn't want to undercut the very profitable jump in the iPhone arena.
It doesn't matter. There's no new... There's nothing... Here's why I support Charlotte's argument 100%.
Well, the first thing people would say is, well, it's $200 to go to 256 in an iPhone, but it's only $20 to go to 256 in an iPod Touch. Apple's gouging us on the phone.
Well, first of all, Apple is probably gouging you on the phone, but anyway.
So they can't undercut their iPhone's pricing strategy.
You basically have to stop selling the iPod because it is ridiculous to sell an old device that has a smaller screen than Kelly's iPhone 8 that mm-hmm. obviously doesn't have a modem in it to connect with cellular that has old tech inside it for a premium price. It is ridiculous.
So
it's actually, I think, bad business. Because if they had charged £99 for that device, mm-hmm. I'd have walked out the shop with it.
I went and looked at the 10R real quick.
Let me do a counterpoint on that, Charlotte. If £99, you'd have walked out of the store. If the McLaren dealer were selling a 720S for $50,000, I'd walk out of the store with one, too. Okay.
But we're not talking about a product that is akin to a McLaren vehicle.
Right.
This is an older piece of kit that has no longer needs any new R&D, barely any new technology
in it. That's true.
Yeah.
There's
a $50 difference. I went and looked.
Tim McCook say, we can take that to the bank.
There is, yes, there is no, I went and looked at the 10R, which is, you know, the affordable phone. And the affordable phone doesn't come in 32 gigabytes, so let's start there. 64 gigabytes is $749. For $50 more, you get 128 gigabytes, and for $100 more than that, it's $256.
So yeah, that John's point is right. Yeah, they're kind of pricing it the same as an iPhone.
Yeah, in those storage jumps, except you're starting with twice as much storage. But that's one thing. And the other things to know is that the things that people take for granted on devices now are not available on the iPod. So, for example, 6 rows of icons above the dock is not a thing on an iPod Touch. Touch ID, Face ID is totally not a thing. Touch ID isn't even a thing. And I think yesterday...
There's no selfie camera, is there, on an iPod Touch? There's one 7-megapixel camera.
No, it's got a front camera.
It does have... It has a selfie camera as well, okay.
Yes.
Because the cameras are akin to a kind of iPhone 6, basically.
Yes. I believe they're the iPhone 6 era front and rear camera. The nudge that it got... When we talked about there being a new iPod Touch.
Apple remembered it sold iPods after 4 years.
Yeah, part of the engineering charge. We have to do something. Mm. So what we're going to put in it is the A10 Fusion chip, which is the processor that currently powers the standard issue iPad. So not the mini. Well, I don't remember what's in the mini. But I'm just talking about the iPad, not the Pro, not the Air, or anything like that. Just the regular old, I think the 349 iPad also has the A10 Fusion chip.
Okay, that's a really interesting point. Now, I would say 349 for an iPad. Mm-hmm. Okay, not a top of the range one, but an iPad. Mm-hmm. That's good value.
Yes.
Right, that's competitive. That makes me think. That makes me have a decision to make, right? I might want to buy that. And in fact, you know, to a certain extent, actually, there's no decision to make. Because if you have, you know, £400-£500 to spend on a tablet, mm-hmm. that kind of device is very competitive and very tempting.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I cannot fathom, I can think of lots of people who would have lots of use for an iPod Touch. I cannot think of many people that would be prepared to spend the money that Apple is asking them to on such a device.
Yeah. And
I just looked at the pricing on the iPhone XR. Like you said, Kelly, to go from 64 to 256 is $150.
It was $50, $749, $799.
To $899.
Oh, sorry. I got it backwards.
So you can imagine that 32 gig to 256 would be 200 instead of 150. So they're keeping the price points parallel. Mm-hmm. Charlotte, isn't the iPod Touch also a thing that parents give children so that they don't...
Well, it used to be.
No, at that price, it's not. That's exactly right. That's exactly the type of use case I could think of. That, you know, you don't want a kid to be out with a phone and, you know, texting whoever and whatever. But you were happy for them to have an internet-connected device, for them to have games and videos and, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing.
And,
you know, on a fairly simple...
Tracking, GPS tracking.
And, right. You know, the thing about... The interesting thing to me about the pricing is that I don't care that Apple wants to charge the highway robbery prices that they're charging for additional storage. I care about two things. First of all, it starts at 32 gigabytes, which still doesn't seem like we should be at 64 by now, honestly, as an entry level storage device. But also, if they want to charge $100 more for the next size up in storage, that's fine, but start $50 cheaper or even $100 cheaper. And you know, like we were talking about with the R&D, like they got all that for free already. There's no Touch ID in it. There's no Face ID. And the cameras are from are like 3 or 4 year old or maybe even 5 year old cameras. So the cameras in it.
What about the psychology part of it, where a parent gives a child an iPod Touch and says, here, take care of this. I paid a lot of money for it.
You can still say that you paid a lot of money for it.
$100.
Treat it with care and respect.
$100 is still quite a lot of money.
Even $150 would be not cheap.
There's a big difference. If you give your kid a $99 iPod Touch and they are careless with it,
they don't get another.
They're going to say, "Well, Dad, you didn't pay that much for it." It's you know.
I don't think so. I think this is
no.
I think what it does is it makes it competitive. It makes the people who might use the device be able to pay for the device. It matches use case with price point, I think.
It's the iPhone Air, right? It's not meant to be your main device. It's meant to be an ancillary device. Like, the point of this is, and the reason it's got the A10 Fusion chip in it, in my estimation, is because they had to beef it up so that there was another thing that could that you could use to hook up to Apple Arcade, which is coming.
It's the only chip that was in production that they could get their hands on.
Well, but, yeah. Okay. You know, but like,
I would... Like I say, for £100, I probably would buy an iPod Touch to play Apple Arcade to...
Isn't that a statement in itself, a diminishment of value?
No, but it's not a new... I understand why the...
No, because that's the amount of value it has for Charlotte. That's the amount of value it has for me.
I'm just asking. I mean, your perceived value is different than Apple's desire to make money.
Yeah, but
always been a conflict with Apple.
Right, but think how many more they would sell if people like Charlotte and I were able to talk ourselves into buying an iPod Touch instead of talking ourselves out of it. Well, because right now it's very easy to talk myself out of it. That's too much money,
They'd sell twice as money for half the price and end up with the same amount of revenue but devaluing the product.
Except but I'm not talking about half. I'm talking about taking off $50. At $150, it would be a reasonable purchase.
Charlotte doesn't think so. She wants it to spend £99.
No, we would think about it, but it's possible that more people would buy at $150 than are going to buy at $200.
And
like,
also,
that's where we're at.
They might then sign up for Apple Arcade or Apple Music.
Exactly. Why is this not the Razer handle, right? Why isn't this the thing?
It's almost a loss leader.
Yeah. Why isn't this the thing they're giving away to hook everybody up to Apple Arcade forever?
When has Apple ever done a loss leader?
The iTunes Store.
I you know, you're right, John. It
I'm giving away.
Actually,
Apple gave away music so that people would put it on their iPods. It was cheaper to buy it and easier to buy it.
A free trial period is different than diminishing the value of your products through loss leaders.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about it was easy to buy a song for $1, and the whole reason they did that was so that people would buy all these songs and then put them on iPods and carry those iPods around.
But it wasn't Apple's product they were selling. They were selling other people's music.
But also, Apple has already diminished the product by having old tech in it, not updating it for 4 years. It doesn't even appear on the front of the Apple website.
Right.
Apple's done the diminishing.
And right. And like, you know what used to be great about the Touch? The iPod Touch used to be awesome. Because
not on the front.
Well, it's under music. If you click on the music tab at the top, you'll see the iPod Touch in the middle.
But it's not staring you in the face the way the iPad is or Mac is.
And exactly.
Here's the thing, though, is that this used to be a great developer device because you could install the betas on it and it didn't take a service plan or anything like that. You didn't have to worry about financing it or upgrade paths or anything like that. But now... it doesn't have the dimensions of any of the iPhones. It doesn't have the tech of any of the iPhones. If you're writing something that relies on Touch ID or you're writing something that relies on Face ID, those aren't going to work. And your app is never going to look quite the same as it does on other devices because the iPod Touch is almost exactly the size of just the screen on my iPhone 8. And most people have a bigger phone than my 8. So
that's a great point, Kelly. How does a developer exploit modern technologies without them?
Right. And so the primary use case that I used to know, like,
a good argument.
Most of the people that I knew that liked the iPod Touch and were into the iPod Touch and super enjoyed using the iPod Touch were people who were enjoying it because that was the era of like the iPhone 5 when that's what the screen looked like, when it was five rows of icons and then the dock. And the camera on the front and the camera on the back and the button on the front. And then we got Touch ID that never came to the iPod. We got Face ID that never came to the iPod. And since you don't have either of those, Apple Pay is not a thing that you can develop for if this is what you're using as your test device. Mm-hmm. So this iPod has aged out of one of its really useful pieces of contribution to a lot of people's work. And that was... being able to develop and beat on something and work it out on an iPod, you know, in a beta OS or what, you know, or use it for a beta app while you had like your production device that didn't have any of that stuff on it. Being able to do that isn't valid anymore. You know, like I said, even the dimensions are wrong. Like if you're designing for an iPod Touch, you're not designing for a modern screen. The end. you're not designing for modern technology. You can't use Apple Pay. You can't use Touch ID. You can't use Face ID. None of that stuff's there. So your secure enclave isn't there because you can't access it because you don't have any of the tools that are supposed to be able to use in that device. So, like, one of the great things about it that made it a really nice bonus device for Apple to have in their lineup, it was sort of this unsung hero because, like, if you went to WWDC, everybody had one device in each hand. Here's my phone that I use all the time that I'm using to text people. And, you know, it's on released versions of the operating system and everything on here works reliably. And now I have this iPod, which is where I install all the crazy stuff. And, you know, I got the beta the day they released it. And, you know, it's running beta one and it crashes on me every 8 minutes. And I don't care because it's not my real device. And I can do all my development and make sure everything works on this iPod before I deploy it. And that's gone now. And there's a lot of stuff that doesn't work like it should anymore. And, you know, so to be as far behind the rest of the curve of the mobile lineup as it is, and then to be charging this kind of money for it, doesn't feel right.
Case made.
There you go.
No, exactly. It's, you could justify the price if you are, if you had things like Touch ID, Face ID, all those extra things that you've just described. You know, never mind if they didn't change one of the dimensions, although I take your point completely about developers and wanting the screen to look the same. Mm-hmm. If you had more technology, modern technology in it, you could justify even more.
Exactly.
But they're not doing that even.
Yeah.
So what do they think the target audience is?
I cannot.
Failing on parents because the parents can't afford them. They're failing on developers because it's not state of the art.
Who is the target market?
You can't even see state of the art from there. That's the thing, and that's part of where, you know, the price becomes like the straw that broke the back. Right? Like, I don't want one because I can't do anything else with it, and it's expensive. You know, if it was, I can't do any of the stuff I want to do, but there's this other thing, or, you know, I could play music on it in the kitchen, or, you know, whatever.
Take, like, it to the gym and not worry if it got bashed up a bit and a bit sweaty.
Yeah.
And ignore my phone for a bit. Or there are loads of use cases at a competitive price.
Yeah.
Apple is not offering it at a competitive price.
Right.
Well, I think we made the case.
I think so, too.
Are you listening, Apple?
Mr. Williams, we look forward to your letters, but even more we look forward to you coming out and saying it's going to be cheaper. That would be great. I think that's going to do it for us today. We've gone a little long, but we had a lot to say on both of these subjects, so we're going to go ahead and go for it. Charlotte, thank you so much for coming by today.
Thanks for having me,
and I really enjoyed talking to you about the iPod. John, thanks for coming by. I really enjoyed talking to you about Apple's
engineering track. You're welcome. Thanks for having me too.
It's been interesting. If you agree or disagree with us, you can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can even leave comments in the show notes. I've been your host, Kelly Gamott. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast for July 17th, 2019. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Be excellent to each other.